Hello and welcome to the Voice of the Arts with your host, yours truly, Joe Weber. Today we're going to be talking with Jim Dunham about the legendary hired gun, Tom Horn. Actor Steve McQueen, shortly before he passed away in 1980, produced and starred in a film about the life of Tom Horn, and it's a film that holds up pretty well. Our guest here on The Voice of the Arts is Jim Dunham. Jim has worked for several years as a docent at the Booth Museum of Western Art up in Cartersville, Georgia, and is very knowledgeable about the American West in the period from the latter half of the 1800s into the early 1900s. Jim, we're going to talk today about one of the legendary characters of the West and of the Range Wars, a fellow named Tom Horn. And my understanding is that Tom got his reputation as a scout during the Indian Wars.
Tom Horn's such a fascinating guy. First of all, he was a very, very smart guy, even though he didn't have a high education. He had the ability to learn languages, and he hired on as a civilian scout during the Apache Wars. By the way, the Apache War is the longest war America ever fought in. 1861, the war with Cochise started, Chiricahua Apache leader Cochise, and it lasted until 1886 when Geronimo surrendered. So during those Apache Wars, Tom Horn is hired by Al Seaver. Al Seaver is his chief of scouts. He's working for General Crook. General Crook was the first guy to say, okay, the only way we're going to capture or catch these Native American warriors is to get people who are Native Americans to work with us. If he hadn't have done that, the war would have lasted another 50 years. But what he did is see, there's many different divisions of most Native American tribes. And so among the Apaches, you got the Chiricahua, you got the Jicarilla, you got the Mescaleros, the San Carlos, you got all these different divisions of Apaches. And some of them are not happy with Geronimo. They're not happy with the fact that Geronimo is maintaining a state of war where he's attacking farms, he's attacking ranches, he's going into Mexico and killing people and stealing cattle and raiding little towns. And so they are willing to help the United States Army. They are willing. And because they are Apaches, they're able to find these guys. They're moving. They're in the mountains. They're always they're on the run. General Crook realized that the only way to catch these guys is to get other Apache tribes to help us, to work as co-fighters and scouts. But you can't talk to them. You can't speak to them. And so you've got to have somebody who can speak to the Native Americans. And they hired Tom Horn because Tom Horn learned these different language dialects. And he was amazing because he was able to be able to communicate and work as a scout. So he had a history of great success. As long as the Indian Wars lasted, he had a history of great success. And he was very well liked. Okay, so after the Indian Wars are over, then we have a problem down in Cuba. And you know, right before the turn of the century, we've got a war with Cuba, and the Assistant Secretary of the Navy happens to be a fellow by the name of Theodore Roosevelt. And Roosevelt decides that he's going to put together a group of volunteers to go down and fight against Spain to free Cuba from the Spanish powers. So he's a Westerner. He's, you know, Teddy Roosevelt's raised in New York. He's a New York guy and a politician, but he spent time out west. He had ranches out west, and he had friends out west. So he gathers up all of his friends that have helped him throughout the years do the Western stuff, and that includes Tom Horn. Tom Horn gets caught up in that group that are called the Rough Riders. Called the Rough Riders because that's what Buffalo Bill called his show. You know, Buffalo Bill called his show Buffalo Bill's Wild West and Congress of Rough Riders of the World. And so this group of Rough Riders go to Cuba, and Tom Horn's job was to take care of horses. The guy at the riding the horse at the front of the men, most of the men were walking, and the men who the when they went up San Juan Hill and Kettle Hill, it was Colonel Roosevelt at the front, but Tom Horn was taking care of horses and managing the horses. But when the war is over, Tom Horn is a fish out of water. He doesn't fit into civilian life.
So Tom Horn is now a fish out of water, and he gets into the employ of some of the big ranchers out in the West. And what states and what period of time are we talking about?
We're talking about from the late 1880s up to just past the turn of the century, past 1900, that this stuff all develops. What happens is you got two things that happen in Montana, Wyoming, parts of Colorado. The first thing that happens is they discover precious metals. You got gold discovered, and you've got silver discovered. And when you have gold and silver discovered, all you got to do is spread the word, and all of a sudden people show up. Okay, and so towns start almost out of nowhere. And you have towns like Deadwood, South Dakota, and you have Cheyenne, Wyoming, and you have Buffalo, Wyoming, and you all these places because of precious metals and that. What's going to happen then also is that the Indian Wars are coming to an end. The Indian Wars on the Western Plains end in the 70s. Custer dies June 25th, 1876 at the Battle of the Little Bighorn. And when Custer dies, the United States government says, okay, we've had enough of this. This was Custer's death was equivalent to 9/11 in America. When those planes hit the Twin Towers, there wasn't any doubt that we were going to be not only angry, but we were going to do something about it. And there wasn't anybody in Congress who says, hey, let's not go after those guys. I mean, nobody. And the same thing happened in 1876. Custer is killed. He's a famous guy. He has a reputation for being the most brave Western leader of Indian wars in the world, and he gets massacred. And, you know, it's very unusual to have a massacre where everybody dies. Alamo is an example. They're very, very rare. Most of the time in a combat situation, the largest number are the people who come home, second largest are the wounded, and the least number are the people dead. And in the case with Custer, everybody on Custer Hill that's with him dies, over 260 men. So the government says, we are not going to play games anymore. We're not going to hold back anything. Whatever it costs, whatever it takes, we're going to bring all these hostile Indians to reservations. In fact, what happens with Sitting Bull is he runs to Canada. He knows he's in trouble. He flees to Canada. But within the next few years, you've got all these Indians on reservations. Now, guess what you have with Indians on reservations? They are wards of the government. You have to provide housing. You have to provide food. You have to provide clothing. You even have to provide education. You're going to have Indian schools. That means there's going to be a tremendous demand for cattle. The combinations of the Indian reservations and the towns that arise because of gold and silver means that the northern western part of the United States suddenly opens up with a tremendous demand for cattle. Just because, you know, first of all, these people all have to eat.
The buffalo are gone now too, right?
Right. See, the buffalo have been killed off. With very few exceptions, the buffalo have been killed off. It's interesting because most people never think about it. They think buffalo hides are made for, you know, killed for their cloth and their clothing and stuff. I'll bet you have no idea what the number one use for buffalo hides were. What's happening in the world is the beginning of the industrial age, and everything is made with machinery, and leather belts run the machines. Leather belts work the machinery that runs the world. And guess what? A buffalo hide leather belt will outlast a cowhide leather belt 3, 4, 5 times. And so if you want to save money and get all your machines working, you need to have leather belts made out of buffalo. Yeah, major reason for the buffaloes to be killed off. And of course, the United States government wanted to control the Indians, so they encouraged the hunters to kill all the buffalo because if the buffalo die, the Indians have no food source, they have to surrender. So what happens now is you've got huge cattle herds in Wyoming, Montana, and all of the northern plains. Most of the land is not good for farming. But the United States government decides that they will let big ranchers lease land. So two things happen. You've got the leasing of land, and they passed the law that said if somebody wants to move from the Chicago or Detroit or someplace and go live out west, that they can, for a very small amount of money, they can homestead 160 acres. And they can go find 160 acres on government land, because all that stuff is government land. It's all owned by the government. And so they can get 160 acres of government land, and they can homestead it. They have to build a house they can live in, usually a sod house, or maybe a log cabin, but mostly a sod house. They have to build a sod house, and they have to live in it for a year. And I think they pay as much as, some of them pay as much as $50. Somewhere, you know, between $10 and $50, but they get 160 acres land. And so lots of people go out there to get free land. The big cattle ranchers don't buy land. They lease land from the government, and they lease millions of acres. In fact, some of the big ranches are as big as some of the smaller states in the United States. In Cheyenne, Wyoming, they form an organization, the Cheyenne Social Club, and it's the owners of the big ranches that get together, and they have dinner and they have meetings and they smoke cigars and they have brandy and stuff, and they talk about their problems. And one of their problems are these small farmers. Now, if the small farmers just took any land, it wouldn't be a problem. But the small farmers want the land where water is. You know, if they find a lake or a pond or a well or water's coming up out of the ground, they put 160 acres and then they fence it. They put fences around it and they say, this is my land. This is my property. And the big ranchers say, we can't tolerate that. We can't have these people breaking up our cattle land, our rangeland, our grasslands, by putting these little farms. We got to get those guys off. We got to get them out of there. And so they hire Tom Horn to solve the problem.
Their problem was with the fencing that it was making the water inaccessible to their cattle.
That's right. That's right. It was a real serious problem. And of course, these guys are greedy. So they don't want anybody getting free land or getting land that they can't have. Think about the idea that Tom Horn now has moved from being a law-abiding citizen working for the United States government to fight Indian wars, and now has decided that he's willing to accept pay to chase people off their land. Now, there are rustlers. And some of the people that Tom Horn goes after are rustlers, and they are stealing cattle. And even the farmers are probably stealing cattle. Because think about it, if you've got 50,000 head of cattle within a couple of miles of where you live, and they're walking around and eating grass and they're grazing, and you're hungry, are you going to kill your own chickens and your own pigs? Or are you going to, maybe when nobody's around, go over and kill a cow and then have nice steak dinners for a while? And so, you know, some of these guys probably did. They probably, they call it long roping or throwing a wide loop. Your wide loop goes outside of your home and catches animals that don't belong to you. So yes, probably the big ranchers are correct that people are stealing their cattle and they are long roping.
And would these small farmers rebrand the cattle or not even bother?
They wouldn't bother with that. They would get caught doing that. And now the people who are cattle thieves, what they would do is they would take the cattle out of the area. They'd drive them to Colorado or someplace, and then they would rebrand them. They would build fires and rewrite the brands with some other brand, and then that way they could sell them. And it's funny because sometimes the market for the selling of stolen cattle was the United States government buying cattle for the Indian reservations. They would buy stolen cattle. So there is some of these farmers stealing, but not all of them. And for the most part, if they are stealing, they're not making a big dent. But the big ranchers don't want those people on their free land, on their grazing land. And so we think that Tom Horn may have killed over a dozen people in that capacity.
Punching wasn't slow. I've turned the longhorn steer one way, the other the buffalo. I went up the trail in the 80s. Oh, the hardships I have stood. I drank the water from cow tracks, boys, when you bet it tasted good. I've rode night guard many a night in the face of a driving storm, and sang to them steers a doleful song as they rattled their hocks and horns. I've been in many a stampede too, I've heard the rumbling noise, and the light we had to turn them by was the lightning on their horns. But many a cowboy I rode within is sleeping on old Boot Hill. And the last cow drive was made to Dodge on the Jones and Plummer Trail. They're building towns and railroads now where we used to bed our cows. And the man with a mule, the plow and hoe, is digging up our old bed grounds. The old cowboy has watched the change, seen the good times come and go. But the old cowboy will soon be gone, just like the buffalo.
That was Don Edwards with the melancholy Old Cowboy. We're going to take a short break from the Western Plains and listen to that very Eastern New York comedian and philosopher Jackie Mason. Let's listen as he talks about the very nature of our identity.
They're still staring at me. I told you before, I don't care if you laugh or not. I'm not saying this because I'm an arrogant person. I don't say it out of arrogance. I say it when I say I don't care if a person laughs or not. It's because I know who I am. That's the trick. The great trick is to know who you are. Most people don't know. Thank God I know. I didn't always know. I'm not ashamed to admit it. There was a time I didn't know who I was. I went to a psychiatrist. I did. He took a look at me right away. He said, "This is not you." I said, "This is not me. Then who is it?" He said, "I don't know either." I said, "Then what do I need you for?" He said, "To find out who you are." He said, "Together, we're going to look for the real you." I said, "If I don't know who I am, how'll I know who to look for? And even if I find me, how'll I know if it's me? Besides, if I want to look for me, why do I need him? I could look myself. Or I could take my friends. We know where I was." Besides, I said to myself, "What if I find the real me and I find that he's even worse than me? Why do I need him? I don't make enough of myself. I need a partner. 10 years I've been glad to look for anybody. Now I'm doing good. Why should I look for him? He needs help. Let him look for me." He said, the search for the real you will have to continue. That'll be $100, please. I said to myself, this is not the real me. Why should I give him the $100? I'll look for the real me. Let him give him the $100. What if I find the real me? He don't think it's worth the $100. Then I'm stuck my money with the real him. I said to myself, for all I know, the real me might be going to a different psychiatrist altogether. Might even be a psychiatrist himself. I said, wouldn't it be funny if you're the real me and you owe me $100? I said, I'll tell you what, I'll charge you $50, we'll call it even. Well, let's be honest, why does a guy take a girl out in the first place? He takes her out so he could be with her when she comes back. I'm there already. Where am I going? There's another fraud. The whole dating system in this country is a study in the mockery and fraud and chicanery and deception. That's all it really is. The most honest man in the world, as soon as he makes a date, he becomes a liar and a fraud. Every man, I don't care who he is, right away he starts out, hello, did you eat yet? Every date starts out with that question. Did you have dinner? What the hell has a dinner got to do with what you want from this girl? You took her out because of a dinner? Is that what you want from her? Answer the question before I throw you out. A date has nothing to do with a dinner. Let's be honest about it. A guy takes a girl out for only one reason, because she appeals to him sexually. Not nice to mention it, but it's sex. If it wasn't sex, he would take out his brother-in-law. But you can't mention sex because it's not nice. You're not supposed to want it. She's allowed to do it, but not if she wants it. She's not supposed to know what you want because she's not supposed to know that that's what she's going to do. So she's supposed to convince herself she don't intend to. She don't want to. She never heard of it. So you have to figure out how to get there without talking so she can do it without hearing.
Let's return now to our interview with Jim Dunham on the subject of hired gun Tom Horn.
He may have killed as many as a dozen people. And one of them is Willie Nickel.
Willie Nickel was a teenager, right?
Willie Nickel was 14 years old. And the Nickel family was a problem to John Coble, who was head of the Cattlemen's Association. And he's probably the one that hired Tom Horn. And he wants Tom Horn to kill Kells Nickel. And Kells Nickel is the father of Willie Nickel. And he's the problem. It's not Willie. They don't care about Willie. They worried about Kells, the father. But on a rainy day, Willie takes his father's raincoat, his father's slicker, and puts on his father's hat because it's cold and rainy outside. And he goes to run an errand, and he goes over to the gate and opens the gate. And Tom Horn is maybe 200 yards away with a Winchester rifle, and he thinks he's Kells going to work. And pow, he drops him dead. And that's it. Now, there are people who think that somebody else killed him. Dean Krakel, who was head of the, he was the director of the Cowboy Hall of Fame in Oklahoma City. He wrote a book defending Tom Horn, saying that the Miller family, that was one of their neighbors, had an argument with the Nickels, and that he was the guy who killed Willie Nickel, and that Tom Horn didn't do it. But here's the problem that we have with trying to defend Tom Horn against that. Tom Horn had two major problems in his life. One was he was a heavy drinker. He may or may not have been an alcoholic. We don't know. But he was a heavy drinker, and he, on a regular basis, went to the saloons and drank heavily and got it by. Problem two, he was a braggart. He bragged about what he did. He did. Joe LaForge, he tells Tom Horn that he wants to meet him in a building and that he wants to consider hiring him to kill somebody. He's posing undercover, and he's telling Tom Horn that he wants to hire him to kill something. All right, so he hires a stenographer to hide in the next room. There's only a curtain. There's no door, just a curtain. And behind the curtain, you got a guy who's writing down everything that's said between Tom Horn and Joe LaForge. He's writing it down. And in this conversation, Joe LaForge said, all right, Did you kill the kid? He sat there and told Joe LaForge with pride at how he had killed the kid from a great distance with his Winchester rifle. And he admitted that he wanted to kill Kells. He admitted that that was what he was trying to do. And he killed Willie instead. But he took credit for it. He said, I killed him. And then when he goes to court, what he says in court, by the way, none of that would hold up today. That would all be, that'd be all, entrapment. None of that, today, by today's courtroom, it wouldn't work. But what he says in court, his defense that he says in court is he says, I was saying those things which aren't true because he had said he wanted to hire me and I wanted to make him think that I had done these things and be, because he expected that I did them and he thought that I did them. So I told him I did them so that he would hire me. That's what he says in court. Court doesn't accept that. It doesn't hold up. So he gets convicted. And he gets sentenced to hang by the neck until dead. During the time he's in jail, and during the time he's waiting to be sentenced, or waiting for the trial, or waiting for the actual hanging, he writes his biography to try to defend himself. And that book is available. It's called I, Tom Horn, by Tom Horn himself. There's no question that Tom Horn confessed to Joe LaForge. The problem is Joe LaForge wasn't saying that he was a police officer. He didn't tell him that he had a guy hiding in the next room, taking everything down. All of that would all be thrown out of court today. During his time, after he had written the book and got the book published, he escaped from jail. He's in Cheyenne, Wyoming. They're waiting to hang him, and he breaks out of jail. His girlfriend, by the way, he did have that girlfriend, the school teacher girlfriend. His girlfriend may have slipped him a gun or something, but he broke out of jail and he took a gun from the desk of the sheriff's office and ran with the gun. The problem was it was a contemporary modern gun, like a semi-automatic. We're talking 1904. There's some new guns. He couldn't make it work. the police are chasing him and he's going click, 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 and he didn't know how to make it work because he wasn't aware of how these modern guns work. And they caught up with him and they captured him, and he hanged one day before his 42nd birthday. So a very fascinating guy, very interesting guy. And a sad story because if it hadn't been for not finding a place to fit in, he would never have gotten hooked up in that world. What he should have done is gone into law enforcement work. He would have been a great cop. He should have become a Texas Ranger. He should have volunteered to serve as a U.S. Marshal, something like that. Because I think he was a man who liked excitement. He was driven by this desire to have an exciting life. And well, that's really sad.
Back then, Jim, they didn't have people that they called life coaches. So
yeah, that's right. That's right.
Jim, thank you so much. Always appreciate your discussions on these characters from the Wild West.
Well, I enjoy it.
Thanks, Jim. Talk to you soon.
All right. Happy trails. Thank you, Joe.
Certainly an interesting character, Tom Horn. The movie made by Steve McQueen and starring Steve McQueen is quite good, holds up quite well, and I was able to find it on Amazon Prime. Folks, thanks for keeping me company. This is Joe Weber saying so long from the Voice of the Arts.